It's just a big pleasure to welcome back, really a favorite here on GoldSeek.com Radio for many years, formerly of Institutional Advisors. Now he runs a new website with his one of his colleagues there, Bob Clark, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just a pleasure to welcome him back to the show on another volatile week in the markets. Hello, Bob.
Good to be with you, Chris, and also good to be with our listeners. I really enjoy this, and especially in a world where such remarkable things are going on. I tell my colleagues and family that it is a privilege to be alive and alert in these kind of financial markets, and let's call it a market too. The political market is incredible. It's a popular uprising, as I've been calling it, that ended up with Trump as its executive. And the shock to the leftist establishment in all political parties has been immense. Trump sort of adds to it with, but I've pointed out that Reagan was a polite man who was trying to reintroduce the concept of limited government. And when nothing stuck, that's where they came up with the nickname, the Teflon President. And more recently, Chris, in Canada, with the former Prime Minister Harper, who for 10 years was Prime Minister, part of it as a minority government. But his drive was to reintroduce the concept of limited government. And of course, the establishment hates that. And they worked him over 24 hours, 7 days a week. And he, Prime Minister Harper, was a polite man. So this is what you can see, that with President Trump, if he was a polite man, he would be getting the same attack, mainly because the political movement underneath, and this is very important to understand, is that this is a popular uprising, and it's similar to the popular uprising in the late 1980s, when ordinary folk in East Germany took on communist dictatorships and shut them down. So I mention this, of course, to liberal acquaintances, and they just can't see the state of the bureaucracy now is sort of the American or the Canadian equivalent, and oh, definitely in England too, the equivalent of a communist authoritarians in Eastern Europe. I mean, let's not overlook China. And the main difference is the ambition exists, but in the Western world, the governing classes have yet to grant themselves the privilege of state murder. But the intensity of the left in Europe today, in England, I did a paper recently, and it's looking at the financial markets and the political market, and in the past, on a strong bull market and a strong economy, it's the result of everybody getting busy. And unfortunately, the left and socialists get busy as well, and they get very strong and very strident, and they make advances. And then, for example, in the great commodity boom of 1920, the left accomplished the Russian Revolution in Russia. And in the United States, the left was nationalizing railroads and all sorts of silly things like that. And then, boom, with the crash in commodities in 1921, and also in economies everywhere, even centrally planned ones in Russia. In Russia, it shifted from classical communism to some kind of a softer socialism as far as trying to determine the allocation of goods and services. And in the United States, they stopped nationalizing railroads. And then later in the bull market in 1928, John Moody wrote an article in Atlantic magazine, and he was extolling the wonders of that bull market and laid it the change from socialism in the United States to markets and also in Europe, and this would open up much more retail trade. So the pattern was commodity boom, everybody socialist, and then it relaxed. And so I'm looking for a change in from where the state has been funding itself with through serial financial bubbles, because currency depreciation is state theft, and this is how they've been funding themselves, because you can only push the rate of taxation so far. And then also the big bull market that climaxed in January a year ago, that was for the New York Stock Exchange Composite Index. It set its high. And then also the World Stock Index without the U.S. in it, it set its high then as well. And then also every great bubble in history has suffered a liquidity crisis in the fall of the year of its greatness, which then happened this time. So, and we were looking, by the way, that the liquidity problem in the fall could run as late as Christmas, which it did. The low was on December 24th. And then the rebound out until maybe into March, which we're getting. But there's still a probability that this could go into a severe post-bubble contraction. And then on the political side, Chris, then the public would look at the trillions of dollars that the central bank has expended in order to prevent bad things from happening. And with a contraction, they're going to say, hey, this is stupid. So the concept of the Federal Reserve System can lose its omniscience and omnipotence. And anyway, so then that's on the market side. Now, on the ambition, where the government believes that it can set the temperature of the earth, that's an audacity usually that one would think would be attributed to gods. But anyways, there is, in the real science side of climate, we're into a solar minimum, and for millions and millions of years, that's driven the climate either up or down. You get a very active sun, you got a warming climate, and as a matter of fact, the last 10,000 years is called the Holocene, which means the interglacial after the last glacial expansion.
I'm afraid you've unleashed a Tyrannosaurus Rex here. I, over the past few weeks, and have been studying this brilliant researcher who's also a geologist like yourself. And by the way, I took geology as a minor with psychology while majoring in economics. So, because you can play out your hypotheses in real time on Earth. It's right there on terra firma, in the strata.
Sure. The Earth is a book.
This brilliant geologist has come up with a theory about, well, 100 different things, from the subatomic to the Holocene period that you're referring to. His name is Douglas Vogt. I don't know, V-O-G-T. He's an American. 40 years ago, he crafted his theory. He's just one of these rare people like yourself and my late paternal figure who did nothing but read for the majority of their lives. You know, I mean, they had wonderful lives, full lives, but they had this unusual, like, 90% photographic memory where they really had almost total recall. He's one of them. The sun has a micronova every 12,000 years. Gleissman, there's a cycle. There's some blows its outer crust off the sun. First, the blast of light and energy, just for about an hour or two, whatever part of the earth that's facing it at the time, the atmosphere evaporates. That causes a massive vacuum. Now, what happens when you have a sudden vacuum in a giant space? It gets cold instantly. He claims is the explanation for the Arctic freeze that froze the woolly mammoths instantly, and they're still pulling them out and feeding them to dog sled teams in Siberia today, by the way, fully intact. Something even more astounding happens. Once this occurs, the fallout from the sun strikes the Earth a few hours later on the side of the Earth, about 12 hours later. It takes that long for the physical, so when it strikes the Earth, it causes melting, fills the atmosphere, as you might imagine, as a giant water vapor cloud. So what does it do? For about 10 years, it snows about a foot of snow a day. Your 3,000 to 6,000 foot ice packs over Vancouver and caused Lake Michigan and all the other Great Lakes.
I've not run into that one, but it's fascinating. We're looking for the rebound out to around March, where last year we had our indicators, Chris, which I remember I called friends of the bull market, and they were likely to be positive out to about mid-year and then turn to adversity, which happened. So now we've got our friends of the rally, which would be industrial commodities such as crude and base metals, improving to around March. And then on the financial side, credit markets like the curve and spreads, favorable until around March. So we're on the markets, but probability that after mid-year, again, you could have some problems. The thing is, the stock market is very clever. On its bull market, it's discounting favorable things, and then it gets way excessive, which it did, and then it goes down, and then that begins to discount perhaps a contraction. But the bull market that did complete last year had a lot of the characteristics of the great classic bubbles in history, such as 1929 or 1873. Now, when I looked back on the bubbles of 2000, the dot-com, and then the 2007 bubble, they didn't quite have as many of the characteristics. So it's likely that history will continue, and after mid-year, we can look for a contraction. Now, one of the things that's missing with the violence of the change in the curve and spreads is that there would be some big people offside on that trade. And there's been no announcements of insolvencies or things like that. So maybe with the positive first quarter, they can keep their fingers crossed and things are going to stay together. But the changes in the financial markets are a sign that a post-bubble contraction is probable.
Before we wrap up here, would you mind giving folks an idea, though, maybe turn up the magnification, as it were, my fine fellow, over the precious metals sector?
Oh, we got to talk about that, because it's part of the feature. The characteristics are of a bubble is that the real price of gold is deflated by the consumer price index in the senior currency goes down with the bubble, and it has. I mean, the real big high was in 2011, and that was overbought, and then it's been coming down. So we can say that since 2017, the gold's real price is attempting to base. Now, the real thing is the next step is that with the contraction and everything else, gold's real price goes up, and that has to do with earnings. And when the real price is going down, it relates to earnings because the profitability in mining is not so good. And then when the real price goes up, it does reflect on profitability. So it'll enhance operations for miners, and it also will enhance the valuation for exploration properties. And being an old geophysicist and being in the game for so long, Chris, I've always got a time for exploration stories. So I think the way to play it is through the stock side. You get a better bang for your money out of being long gold stocks at the right time than being long gold itself. Gold is sort of a protection item. So golds have had nice rallies. They're going to get some corrections in here, but maybe after mid-year we can then make the call that gold's real price has set the uptrend and that we're at the start of a cyclical bull market for the sector that, Chris, and get this, will become very speculative. It'll be fantastic. But that's ahead of us, and I think we can advise our clients on how to get there. So,
brilliant. Well, you probably need to hop. Do you have a little more time to maybe put the magnifying glass over U.S. equities?
Yeah, a big stock market, good through March, and then we'll make another call on it, but likely in the early stages of a post-bubble contraction, in which case it would end up with a bear market for equities. One of the safe places for investors that we like is the 3 to 4 year term in good grade corporate bonds. And for investors outside of the U.S., such as in Canada, having U.S. corporates would be great because the probability is the U.S. dollar will be firm in a post-bubble contraction. So there is a practical place for safe money to go, and rather than just cash where the T-bill rate can go to zero, if you've got 3 to 4 year corporates, you've got these days a decent yield, and they won't kill you on price or risk. So there is a safe place to be.
And if you wouldn't mind, please tell people how they can find your website.
Oh yeah, that's easier. I just set it up as bobhoy.com. So I'm just Bob Hoy, B-O-B-H-O-Y-E, and all the articles and how to get in there all comes up. It's impressive.
There's no hyperbole, I think, at all in noting we can't wait to hear your thoughts again in 2019.
Give us a call. Okay, Chris.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. OneGold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. OneGold uses VaultChain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. VaultChain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through OneGold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, OneGold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as as easy as a single mouse click.
Vault Chain
offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.